We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home, and we're up to one of the most important mitzvot, one of the most important mishnayot in life, in the Jewish home. Tremendous applications. The Mishnah begins, we're in the first chapter, the sixth Mishnah. Yoshua ben Prachya and Nitai Arbeli. We have two great rabbis, Yoshua ben Prachya and Nitai Arbeli. Kibelu Mehem, they received their tradition from Yossi ben Yochanan and Yossi ish Yerushalayim. It's interesting to note, Yoshua ben Prachya is recorded in the Talmud as having a disciple who went off the deep end and started worshiping a block and ultimately came out and said he's the son of God. In Nachmanides' arguments with the apostate, the Jewish apostate, one of Nachmanides' arguments is that Yoshua ben Prachya lived over 200 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. So even though the Talmud discusses a Yeshu, who was the disciple of Yoshua ben Prachya, that doesn't coincide. It's a few centuries off of the Yeshu that's discussed by the Christians.
Wait, so the first one does know with them?
He's saying that if you want to refer to the Yeshu referred in Talmud, it's not the same Yeshu the Christians are talking about.
So who are they talking about?
It's not the same person. He's saying you can't... I'm not saying who they're talking about. I'm just saying it doesn't fit. Very often they say, in the Talmud it says about Yeshu this, that, and other thing. Right. And the Talmud was talking about someone who lived over two centuries before the destruction of the Second Temple. Could be, but then they have to answer for it. Saying I that's just a point to notice that you're talking about Shimon HaTzadik is the second generation of the temple, Antignos, Yossi, and Yoshua. So we're talking four generations into the leadership of the second temple. And we're talking about 200, 250 years before the destruction. You're talking about before the period of the Hashmonaim, before the period of Hanukkah, this story. Okay, so Yoshua ben Prachya tells us, number one, Asei lecha rav, create for yourself a teacher, a master. Wow, create for yourself. Why did he use that word? So Rashi says, because don't try to teach yourself. If you listen, if you're being taught, you'll retain better. Rambam says, even if he's not bigger than you, but if he teaches you, if you have a teacher who you feel like you can go to and ask your questions to, you will grow better. So this is, if we'll take this for the Jewish home, this is a very important principle in the home. Who is the rabbi of the home? I highly recommend that every person and their spouse figure out together who they want their rabbi to be. And this alleviates a lot of religious pressure from the home. I always say that most halachic questions are more relevant to the woman than the man. And so therefore it's recommended that you choose someone who your wife feels very comfortable with their rulings. If it's a rabbi that's going to be stringent about every single question, your wife might be very happy with that, but she might be very upset with that. You have to find someone who she feels very comfortable with their rulings. Because if he rules that you have to wash lettuce 15 times and then check it twice with a magnifying glass, that impacts her. If he rules that you're not allowed to buy the Hechsher of Bel's Agudas Yisrael, Chacham Ovadia, etc., that affects her much more than it affects you, even if you help with the shopping. If he rules you're not allowed to eat by any of the neighbors, she's going to have difficulty in it. And if he rules that your kids all have to wear long pants and long sleeves and this from the age of 3 months, that's going to affect her. It's going to affect her shopping. It's going to affect how she can have kids that might be very antsy in the heat. A lot of the things will affect her more than they'll affect you. And so it's very important that you choose a rabbi that you're both comfortable with and you both feel you can trust when he's stringent and when he's lenient. So if he tells you, you can eat strawberries, don't worry about it, there are no bugs in strawberries. So even though you hear other rabbis say there are issues with bugs and strawberries, you'll ask him, and either he'll tell you, yeah, that's not in our climate, that's not in our territory, whatever he'll say, you'll live with. If he tells you, whatever ruling he'll tell you, you're allowed to lift your pet on Shabbos. And he'll say, but Shulchan Aruch says not. And he'll say, right, Shulchan Aruch wasn't talking about pets. We have pets, our pets are part of our house. That's an animal that you're allowed to lift on Shabbos. Shulchan Aruch was talking about the chicken you're going to eat next week. That's not your pet. That you're not allowed to lift on Shabbos. That's muktzah. Okay, he's giving that ruling, so you can go with it. If he's stringent, if he says, you have to accept Shabbos 40 minutes before sunset, and I don't care that your neighbor isn't, that's when you have to accept Shabbos, you'll go with it. There'll be times he'll be stringent, there'll be times he'll be lenient, but if you're both comfortable with his rulings, so then the house can run more properly. And in general, in our day and age, where there's a new rabbi who's putting many rabbis out of business, his name is Rabbi Google. People just type in their question, and let's see what Rabbi Google has to say about it. So it can be very confusing, and that's not the way to lead a Jewish life. Now, Rabbi Google never got smicha. So you have to have a real live responsible rabbi who you ask your questions to. I personally recommend that Chozrim B'Tshuva and Gerim find a rabbi who has experience and will therefore be able to tailor-make the answers to fit a Chozer B'Tshuva or Ger, because part of answering a question is understanding the person who's asking. So that's your responsibility, who you find. And many questions can be done long distance. Some questions cannot. You can't ask a rabbi in Uzbekistan whether the Eruv in France is kosher. How's he going to know? You know, some things you need a local rabbi for. And kashrut, very often the questions of which kashrut agencies you can trust, the local rabbi will know. In questions of which mikveh is a good mikveh to go to, or which shul, or other questions, a local rabbi will know. But many questions you can ask. You can ask a rabbi all over the world. So it's important to have a rabbi you both feel very comfortable with. It's also important to have a local rabbi. So that's number one. Asei lecha rav, and this is a rule in life. We should always have someone who we can go and ask our questions to. That's number one. Yes, Daniel.
So what do rabbis do?
They also have a rabbi. They also have a rabbi, for sure.
Yeah, but you know the halachic rulings, like more or less.
Doesn't matter. I can tell you that in my house, until I took the position in Kochav Yaakov, I would never answer a shayla. Every question that came up, I tell my wife, let me call and ask the rabbi. And my wife would ask me, and what do you think? And what difference does it make? We'll ask the rabbi. And every so often she'd push me, and I tell her, I think this, but we'll ask the rabbi. And Baruch Hashem, I don't think I ever got it wrong. Saying we don't say that. But now it's a little funny. Like, what am I supposed to do?
I think, like, in terms of kasod, I think it's a little bit funny.
No, whenever possible, I ask. Whenever possible, I ask. I try not to be the rabbi in my own house. It's not healthy. It's better to export the questions. Let someone else give the ruling. It's highly recommended for rabbis as well. Asei lecha rav. Have a teacher, a master, have someone you ask your questions to. Number two. Uknei lecha chaver. And acquire for yourself a friend. Acquire for yourself a friend. So I want to quote you from the Rambam. I'll translate the Rambam. Rambam says, notice the change in terminology. It says, make a teacher and acquire a friend. It doesn't say make a friend. Why not? So the Rambam says, because in order to acquire a friend, what you're looking for is someone who you'll connect to and who will complement you. And as such, in all of life, you will find you have a partner who will help you get it right. Before we continue, I just want to mention, I saw a person apply this, and it was a very interesting chidush to me. I have a good friend who's an inventor, and he has fantastic inventions. I mean, for different inventions, he's been offered millions already, and he told me he doesn't do a single business without a partner. And I said to him, why? He said, I sign up with my partner that we're not allowed to develop an invention or anything of the sort without it running through our corporation. We're both signed on to such a deal. And I said, why would you do that? You have such great inventions. Why would you bind yourself to this? He said, it doesn't work that way. In business, the last thing you want to do is go it alone. You have a partner, you're much stronger. There are things that I don't know how to do, and he knows how to do. And there are things that he doesn't know how to do, that I know how to do. And the best thing in life is having a partner. So that sounded very extreme to me. It sounded far out. But then I started paying attention and looking at different businesses I know. Those that go it alone work very, very hard. And when people have a partner, very often they can overcome many obstacles because each one has their strengths. Obstacles that can down other businesses. And when you're a partner, you're much stronger. Our sages say that when Choni HaMe'agel fell asleep for 70 years and he awoke to find generations had passed, his own grandchildren were around. So he came to the academy and no one recognized him. And he had no one to talk to. He could answer everyone's questions, but he had no one to talk to because he was on a different level than everyone else. So he said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, O chavruta o mituta, I'd rather have either a friend or let me die. I can't live a life where I'm in my own little bubble. I have no one to connect to. So a person, even a great person, needs friends. And if a person can't find it, he can't find a friend, so he has to pursue it. And even if he has to invest in drawing a person to his friendship to the point where he'll like him, he has to pursue it. That's why the Mishnah says, acquire a friend. You might have to invest in the friendship so that he'll like you. It could be that it won't happen right away. So that's step one, the importance of friendships. And sometimes in life, people can go many years without a friend. You know, I'm often tempted to give guys a questionnaire that I don't have to read, but you have to reread. And one of the questions I would ask is, who are your three best friends? And I don't want to see your wife on that list, even though theoretically I want to see your wife on that list. But you need friends other than your wife. Leave your wife out for a minute. Men are not good at this. Men very often don't have friends. And women will very often be so focused on developing their home that they also don't have friends. It's not good. Men need male friends and women need female friends. And obviously, a man needs a compadre for life. You need a wife. But aside from that, people have to develop friendships. I was once on a bus and the kids were talking about friends. And at one point they turned to their father and they said, Abba, who are your friends? Now this is a whole rowdy bus. And the guy is sitting there uncomfortably. And they're all sitting there looking, Abba, who are your friends? Now that you know how it goes in a bus when suddenly something gets interesting, so everyone around goes quiet. So the father says, kids, keep playing, it's okay. Right? He tries to switch the subject. But it was such a telling moment. When he was cornered, he didn't know what to say. Well, we have the neighbor. There's the guy I sit next to in shul. And the kids were like, no, Abba, but really, who are your friends? I don't think that's why. We don't invest time in developing friendships.
We don't have the same social media that women do.
I think men would have a different life. The Mishnah says acquire a friend. The Rambam's still going to discuss the different types of friendships. Let's see. Number one, the Rambam says, people of ethics say, when you want to like someone, don't do it on your terms, do it on their terms. You want someone to be your friend, you have to figure out how to develop that friendship. Part of developing that friendship is matching them. When we have friends, some people have a hard time making friends. Some children have a hard time making friends. And often it's because they don't know how to match the other person's needs. A kid brings a friend over and he says, come, I like to play chess. And the other kid says, but I don't know how to play chess. And the first kid says, come, I'll show you. And the second kid says, but I don't want to play chess. And he says, but I'll show you. He's very excited about what he wants. So it sounds silly. It sounds self-centered. Watch how many adults have a conversation the exact same way. I want to discuss with you, but Did you ask the other person if they want to discuss that with you? How many people enter a conversation and they have their agenda, but they're not good listeners? So people want to have friends, but are they willing to be a friend on the other person's terms? The Rambam says the key to acquiring a friend is to be willing to be a good friend. Am I willing to listen? Do I ask the other person, how are you? How's your life? How's your day? Am I there for them? It's one of the key tools we use to develop friendship, and it's not only children that lack this tool. It's adults too, usually the people who feel most lonely. I have a friend who's a very talented fundraiser. He's a retired army chaplain, and he decided to fundraise. So his strengths are firstly that he's not daunted. He's a tall fellow. He's already got a white short beard. And he's very friendly. And he's always willing to listen and hear what other people have to say. And he has a good word. And he once told me the following story. He said, there's a guy here in Israel who's a multi-millionaire. And I tried a long time, you know, I was friendly with him and we developed a relationship. And I tried to get him to support all kinds of different causes, to help orphans, to help the needy, to help the wounded. I couldn't get him to give a penny. And it's very interesting. He always complains that no one talks to him. He always complains that he has no friends in life. So I was a little bit his friend for a period of time. And what I saw is that he has no one to talk to. When he finally has someone to talk to, all he can do is talk about himself. And if he would donate, he has all this money sitting in the bank. If he would donate, he would be a part of society. He would get invited to events. He would be a part of affairs. He'd have people who he's connecting to, but he doesn't give anything of himself. So if he's not giving anything of himself, so he ends up living in his own little castle, and he's very lonely. He's got no one. So I'm not saying we all have to give millions in order to have friends. On the contrary, we don't have. It's not about giving money, but it's about being a good friend to them. Like the Rambam says, being a good friend means I'm willing to see what they need. Can I enter a conversation and listen? Can I enter a conversation and let the conversation flow the way the other person wants it to flow? That's an example. Saying it's relevant to many things. So that's number one. The Rambam says acquiring a friend means being a friend. Sometimes it means I can do it on their terms. And that's one of the great difficulties in marriage as well. You enter a conversation and your wife is not getting to the point. And after about 5 minutes, you say, what do you want to tell me? And she's not exactly sure. And at that point, you're tempted to give the classical male response, which you might give to your 7-year-old daughter, which is, when you know what you want from me, tell me. In other words, until then, be quiet. Which is not the way you should talk to your wife. In conversation, women will very often want to just talk, and men don't. There are many things in marriage where we're different. After an argument, women want to get close, and men don't. Men want to walk out. One of the worst things you could do as a man is walk out. I didn't say I'm leaving you, I just said I want to go out and get some fresh air. Right? But that's the most hurtful thing to a woman. After there's an argument, what she wants is close time, and what you want is separate time. Leave me alone, let me go to my cave. You're sitting and you're working on the internet and your wife starts talking to you. You're sitting and you're trying to learn and your wife starts talking to you. So what's the classical male response? You look up impatiently, yes. You're making it 500% clear, I don't want to talk to you right now, but what do you want? Wait a second. Is the internet more important than her? So she might actually say that, even though she won't. To which your response is going to be, is everything a question about whether I love you or I don't? I love you. Now let me work on the internet. Wait a second. First of all, everything is a question about whether you love her or not. Whether you like it or not, that's the way women work. Everything is a question about whether you love her or not. It goes the other way too. For men, everything is a question, do you respect me or not? Am I worth anything in your eyes or not? We just play on different fronts, but we're all playing a game. But is it fair to answer her that way? And you'll say, is it fair that she's talking to me when I'm trying to concentrate? I've been trying to write this email for 45 minutes and she doesn't give me 2 minutes of silence? And I'll say, pause. Conflict of interest. What does it mean to be a good friend? Can I play on their terms? Not my terms. In marriage, we will often find that it's not fair. Why can't she do things on my terms? Why can't she just give me a few minutes of quiet? Okay, you might be right. What did the Rambam say? Being a good friend means I can play on the other person's terms. So that's point number one. We're just beginning. The Rambam over here has a small piece on friendship, on love, on connection, and that's why this Rambam is so important. The Rambam says, when two people focus on being a good friend to the others, so then they will unite to one desire. This is another point that sounds synonymous with what we just read, but it's not. It's a further development of the concept. One of the great weaknesses that couples have when they have an argument is that each one knows what I want, and it does not seem like we can meet. Let's take a simple example. We'll start with small, and we'll quickly evolve to something much bigger. Where are you going to be this coming Shabbos? So you're dying to hear a talk that's going to be given in your shul this Shabbos. And she very much wants to be with her sister who's coming home from her year abroad this coming Shabbos. Now, how can the two meet? So you're very tempted when you're newly married to say, look, I'm going to miss you and I love you, but you want to be there and I want to be here. Why don't you spend Shabbos there and I'll spend Shabbos here and we'll both be happy, right? Let's break up. No, that's not an option. We're married. So what's an option? Well, I could give in and spend the whole Shabbos feeling bad that I gave in. Or you could give in and I could spend the whole Shabbos feeling bad that you gave in. We'll both feel bad. So there's no good option, right? Doesn't life often put us in such circumstances? Let's take a more severe example. You are offered a job in New Jersey. You have a tremendous promotion where you will make $2 million a year. She says, I don't need the $2 million a year. I want to be next to my parents. We live next to my parents. Right now you're making a salary we live fine by, and there will be other opportunities. I don't want to go live in New Jersey. I don't speak English. We got married. We said we'd live up here in Beit Shan or Rosh Ha'ayin with all the other Yemenites. I don't want to go out there where. Hey, we agreed we're living here. And you say, but I got this offer. How can we meet? I'll tell you what. I'll work there and I'll visit you every so often, right? So we're very tempted. But that's not marriage. That's not an option. How do we find a solution? The first key to finding a solution is this Rambam. And that's why it's step two. You go out and you say, let's think together. But when we think together, I have to really look at the question through both our eyes. And let me begin by saying, what you want is important to me. And I do not want to forgo what you want. And then I can start discussing, look, these are the benefits, but this is the cost, and the cost matters a lot to me. And I'm not prepared to forgo what's going to make you happy. So maybe we should forgo what's going to make me happy. And if she approaches it this way and you approach it this way, then you can become one. If we look at the question and we say, what's important to you is important to me because you are important to me, then I can start having a conversation as a married couple. You'd be surprised how most couples don't do this. Most people will spend their whole married life having a conversation which is, this is what I want, this is what you want, let's compromise. That's not a conversation of married people. Married people have to approach the conversation as, this is what you want, and so it's very, very important to me. And I shouldn't just say that, even though initially I might. It could be in the beginning of married life, you don't mean it. This is what's important to you, and I learned in class that I'm supposed to say it's very important to me. Do not say those words. Hi, you're laughing. You know how many people did that? No, they meant. Even if you don't mean it, say it. And that has to be the vantage point. So there's no one solution. But if we can both look at it that way, and we can both draw out what's important to us, and then we start exploring, can you expand, can we understand a little bit better what's important to you? And then she sees that you're really investing time to understand and find a way to make her happy. Then we can start looking for a solution as a married couple. And that's what the Rambam said, that's the next step. That being a friend is not only that your interest interests me, But through my focus on what interests you, and through our discussion of things, as we end up as one unit, if what interests you interests me, and what interests me interests you. And that's where we want to get to. And then the solution will be a viable solution which is productive to our marriage.